Tonight on Arena, John Banville on his new novel, Snow, and Rialto, Eternal Beauty, and the Trial of the Chicago Seven are the movies up for review. #51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. Set in rural Wexford in 1957, Snow is the latest novel from the pen of John Banville. The action revolves around Ballyglass House, home of local gentry, the Osborne family, in whose library a priest is found dead, obviously murdered, one morning just before Christmas. We're quite definitely in the world of crime fiction here, but it is John Banville that's speaking to me this evening, and that's my first question. Obviously, John, Quirk is present, who we know from the Benjamin Black novels. Hackett from the Benjamin Black novels is here as well, but we have a new detective bringing us through Snow. But on the front cover, the first thing that has to be remarked is it's Snow by John Banville. Why is Benjamin Black no longer?
Hello, Sean. Yes, I have killed off Benjamin Black now.
Why?
I got fed up with them. I'll tell you. I had to write a sequel to one of the books, which meant that I had to go back to some of the previous ones, and it makes me physically sick to read my own work. So I hit on the clever ruse of listening to them on audio.
Yeah.
And I discovered listening to them in that way that I was distanced from them. It suddenly struck me, these are not bad books at all. Why should I hide behind a pseudonym that everybody knows is me anyway? So I killed him off. It's the power of the author, you see. You can kill at will.
You can do what you want. But, I mean, I remember at the time, I mean, it created such a fuss. There was lots of fun had around it at the time. And there were those comments in and around the idea that writing a crime fiction novel was possibly more craft than it was art. And that I remember you saying to me, John Banville takes days and days to write a few sentences. Benjamin Black can churn them out at will. What about the John Banville that was writing Snow? Is this more craft than art? Is it more art than craft? Has that attitude changed?
Oh, no writer ever churns out sentences at will. It's always difficult. As the great English critic Cyril Connolly remarked, it's as hard to write a bad book as it is to write a good one. I regard these books as you say, as craft work. I'm proud of them. I feel very suspect about the other ones, the pretentious Banville ones. Nothing wrong with pretension in an artist, by the way. But these are different kinds of books, a different venture. I enjoy doing it, and I don't enjoy doing the other ones. It amuses me. I've done everything now. I think I've even written a memoir. I've written a Raymond Chandler novel. I've written a Henry James novel. I've written historical novels. All I have to do now is write a rollicking comedy.
And you won't find a new name for that. You'll stick with John Banville when that comes along. Well, listen, let's talk about the specifics of Snow then, and where you're bringing us with this. It is kind of like a follow-on to the Quirk series in many ways, but with a new hero here, Detective Inspector St. John Strafford. That was gave you, I suppose, a way of re-establishing it as John Banville and said, let's just get on with it now and admit it, that that's who it is. What did you want to take on when you took on St. John Strafford? Was there something new that you wanted to explore with him?
Well, I should say that Quirk hasn't gone away, you know. I have a new book coming out next year, which Quirk is one of the main characters. Strafford is back as well. I can't be stopped. He can't be stopped. I wanted to... It amused me, first of all, to write a parody, to some extent, or pastiche anyway, of the Big House mystery novel, outdoing Agatha Christie. I had a lot of fun with it. It fascinated me and amused me to put a son of the ascendancy into the Irish Garda Síochána corner. Absolute impossibility, of course, in those days. But I don't care about impossibilities. Strafford I like very much. He's very retiring. He has a sharp edge to him. He has a dark edge to him. He's a more lightsome character than Quirk, who's very dour. So I like doing it, and it amused me. You know, it amuses me to invent these characters. In the old days, I used to never be interested very much in character or dialogue or plot or any of that stuff. In this, it's all dialogue. It's all character. It's all plot. And I discovered I could do it. I don't like the idea of genre. I've said this many times before. If I were to open a bookshop, it would be, the books would be arranged in alphabetical order. And there certainly wouldn't be a dark corner labeled literary fiction. You may as well paint on a skull and crossbones and say, stay away from here, you know, poisonous stuff. To me, there's just good books and books that are not so good. I have to keep in mind that a bad book is as hard to write as a good one.
You talk about pastiche there, just after the prologue, which is where we find the dead priest that I mentioned in the introduction. The opening line in chapter one, the body is in the library, Colonel Osborne said, and later into that chapter, we realise that there's a candlestick beside the body. Cluedo must have been somewhere in your mind, having a colonel, a library and a candlestick.
Yes, I mean, look, one of the great pleasures of writing in this genre, even though I don't like the genre, but writing these kinds of books, is that one has to deal with cliché. And playing with cliché is very interesting, it's very intricate. It's a challenge. I suppose real crime writers would be furious at me saying this, but, you know, it is a clichéd form. But then the high literary novel is also a clichéd form. There's nothing new to say, only new ways of saying it. So, yes, I loved opening it with the bodies in the library, said the colonel. And yes, of course, there is a sense of play in it. But as readers will discover as the book goes on, it becomes very dark indeed. Mm.
And the other thing that you've done that's new in some ways here, new in terms of the crime fiction side of things, is that you bring us to Wexford. The setting here is Wexford, and I guess 1957, the Wexford of your childhood.
Well, a friend of mine said to me recently, another book, and I said, yes. He said, I suppose you're going back to bloody Wexford again, are you? And I realised that I returned there again and again and again in my imagination, but it's an invented Wexford, as Joyce's Dublin is an invented Dublin. I'm not making a comparison there between Joyce and myself. But, you know, one imagines reality into fiction. That's how it's done. That's how it works. I remember when I did the Book of Evidence, and I came to the end of it, and as most people know now, that book was based on a real murder case. And at the end of it, I thought, oh, so goodness, I better have the lawyers look at this. And when the lawyers looked at it, they threw up their hands and said, don't publish this, it's full of libels. By that stage, I had forgotten that it was based on fact. It had become entirely fiction. That's what happens. The novelist fictionalizes the world in order to get at some kind of truth, which is not factual, but is truth nevertheless.
So in this novel, we're in Wexford. We're in Wexford in 1957, and we're in the big house in the case of the Osbornes. And the Catholic-Protestant dynamic is hugely important here.
Yes, well, the dynamic is hugely important in Irish life, or at least used to be. It's probably the young don't care about it anymore. But in those days, you know, I remember I wasn't allowed as a Catholic boy to go into a Protestant church. What was supposed to happen to me if I went into a Protestant church was never specified. Like swept away into the white slave trade or something, being a very pretty boy. Yes, it was a time that I hope the young have forgotten. I wish they would remember the lessons of it, but the young are the young. And it's their job in a way to forget and to move on. But yes, those were dark times. And those times were ruled over by very, very, by very wicked people, many of them. What I think is a chilling little scene between Stafford and John Charles McQuaid in this book. McQuaid is not remembered by very many people.
Yeah, I thought that John Charles McQuaid presence was quite humorous in some ways. Yes, dark, for sure. He is there in the background in the Quirk novels, but here you have him in his summer residence in Wexford. Any factual reality behind that, or is this just the joy of being the author? You can give him a holiday home in the sunny southeast.
Oh, yeah, he had a holiday home, and a friend of mine has his own holiday home built on the site at the moment. And my friend asking about in the area, the border between Wicklow and Wexford, asking about McQuaid, and the locals would frown and say, well, we didn't let the children go near him. I'm sure already your switchboard is humming.
But he is a very dark figure. And despite the fact that, as you've said, St. John, your detective inspector, is a Protestant, he seems to almost have a kind of power over Stafford as well.
Yes, I mean, they ruled. I'm blue in the face, beating on this drum to mix metaphors. They had almost absolute power, those people. The churchmen, the politicians who were afraid of them, the politicians who connived with them. This is a very, very dark time. We didn't know it at the time. We were happily ignorant. Well, we weren't ignorant. We knew and we didn't know. But lots of children disappeared. Lots of young women were violently treated. Lots of children, just children, were sent to the most appalling Dickensian industrial schools way off in the west of Ireland. It's a time, as I said earlier, it's the job of the young to forget, but it's also the job of the young, or at least it's our job to remind the young of sins of the past. Because if we forget the sins of the past, we will easily commit lots of sins in the future.
One question on the literary side of things. You mentioned Joyce earlier on, and it's a very snowy Christmas in 1957 in this story. Were there any nods towards the dead and snow being general all over Ireland?
No, not at all. Somebody else mentioned that to me, but that had never occurred to me at all. I suppose it should have, but no, it didn't. I was just fascinated by the notion of snow because even the way things are going, we probably won't see any snow in this country ever again in our lifetimes. So, it's a very strange phenomenon, snow. When you let your pet dog or your cat out the back door when it snowed, they do a double, triple take. The world has suddenly turned white overnight. I mean, look, I love the Irish climate. I think it's the best in the world. And I wish we would get some snow. I'd love to see snow falling outside the window now. But, said that, and I have to think of all the homeless and the people living on the streets. They would not welcome snow.
Yeah.
I don't want to do a Dickens, but these are hard times and they're getting harder.
Listen, John, it's great to have spoken with you this evening. We can expect the new Quirk book then. Is that on the go at the moment or is it finished? Is it nearly there?
Well, that will be out, I think, this time next year. As I said, I can't be stopped. You have to stop me before I do it again.
Well, listen, don't stop. And great to speak with you this evening. That's John Banville speaking to us about his latest novel, Snow, which is published by Faber and Faber.